And the we'll get into a little bit of that. It's a doesn't have the vetting, proofing strength of a PIV credential, but it might be good enough for these type of use cases. Next slide. So system architecture, the different components include an authentication device, which would be, in this case, the watch. And there's a phone there. It's a little confusing, but in this case, the authentication device would be the secure element that's embedded in the wearable. Spacebar, please. Client, which could, in this case, in the use cases that we talked about, would either be the PC or laptop, or it would be the phone. An authenticator, which actually validates the credential, authenticates the user. And finally, the relying party, who then accepts authentication, which is proxied by an IDP of some kind. So the system architecture for issuance looks like it's got animation in it. So request enrollment, going to a portal, proofing, vetting, that sort of thing. We're all familiar with that from the PIV issuance process. Once that comes back as a favorable adjudication,
it is now joined.
Key pair is generated on the secure element, and then the public key is passed back up to the device manager and then registered into the OpenID service or the SAML service. So it would be a cloud authentication service. And then for authentication, you can hit the next slide. For authentication, it's now I authenticate to my device, I enter my PIN, I sign an authentication package with the private key that I have on my authentication key pair. I authenticate to the SAML or OpenID IDP, who then provides claims or assertions to the relying party applications. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, but at the end of the day, what you have is a very, very convenient authentication use case that is pretty secure, at least from an architectural perspective. And it's hard to argue that it gets more convenient than that, than something that you're wearing. So the three pilot projects involved the DMDC pilot, the DoD pilot. And in that case, what we were doing was actually demonstrating use of a derived credential that was issued using a CAC as a breeder document.
It is now exiting.
Okay, so we don't need to rehash derived credentials. I mean, I think we're all familiar with the variations of that definition, but the idea is that there's already such a strong proofing and vetting process for the PIV credential and the CAC, there's no reason you can't use that as a reader document for an additional credential.
Andrew, I may have missed this because I was DMDC is part of your team?
DMDC, yes, they are. DMDC is absolutely part of the team. And I'll talk a little bit more in detail at the end.
Okay, I'll show
about the what was involved in that pilot. Social media, strong authentication to that application, whatever application that you're using a strong credential in the wearable, and then the healthcare pilot would be a strong portable credential for a doctor. So we're not as concerned about derived credentials in that case. We have a built-in proofing and vetting mechanism for issuing those credentials in a non-federal scenario. And you know, as I indicated earlier, it's probably good enough for at least most people, strong enough. So in issuing, this is sort of talks about the issuance infrastructure. The device was a mobile phone, the client. So we had a secure element embedded in the phone. A mobile handset and a browser was the actual device that we were using. Credential was a PKI certificate, and then the authentication was PKI to an IDP, and then a SAML assertion to a relying party application. Provisioning was essentially putting the phone onto a contactless reader, issuing over the NFC channel via card emulation, generating the keys on card. Healthcare, personal authentication device with a GIX container. So that could be a lanyard. That could be something that the doctor is wearing around his or her neck. The client was Windows Active Client, credential PKI, and the authentication was a contactless logon to a Windows domain via Windows Workstation. Again, issuance was contactless via the NFC interface provided by the personal authentication device. For the DMDC, it was a mobile GIX container contained on a handset. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'll tell you that I have not been intimately involved in this pilot. I'm aware of it from a reasonably low level, but as far as the actual technology, how what phones were used, what actual secure elements were used, I'm not sure I could give you that kind of detail today, but if there are questions about that, I can certainly take questions and come back to you. The PKI credential was derived from the CAC. So it's a second credential, separate key pair for authentication and for signature, recovering an existing encryption key to a second token, and then the same type of authentication scenario, PKI to the IDP, and then a standalone assertion to a relying party application. And again, it was issuing that over a contactless interface, over NFC via card emulation, just like, for instance, you would issue a card in a contact fashion. It's a similar experience, but you're just setting a device on top of contactless.
It is now joining.
So, the DMDC pilot. So we have, at the core of all of this, is the DMDC pilot specifically, is the use of a CAC, or a smart card credential, contactlessly on an NFC-enabled handset. And the contactless protocol being used is something that's called opacity. I did a presentation on opacity, I think it was in August or September. But essentially, what opacity is a secure contactless protocol that essentially enables you to encrypt the session between the token and the phone so that you can pass things like the PIN across that contactless channel. Today, obviously, you can't do that because in the current iteration of PIV card and PIV applet that we see deployed out there today, the traffic is not encrypted. And there's also the contactless firewall on the PIV applet. So there's only a very, very restricted subset of information available over the contactless interface.
Is it fair or correct or accurate to say that opacity is essentially a wireless version of a contact reader? Everything
it is
over contact would be available as through the secure encryption and so forth?
Yes. That's the vision. Is that that is deemed secure enough that now we can do what was previously limited to a contact-only transaction and not be done contactlessly. Obviously, that has huge ramifications for not only physical, but logical access.
And is there any dependence on the credential, the CAC, to support opacity, or is opacity all on the device that's trying to read it?
Opacity has to be loaded on the credential itself.
Okay.
And then the device has to also be opacity aware.
And is that, if you put opacity on a card, is it still, if it's 201, now 2, compliant card?
So I think once 800-157 and some of these other accompanying publications are released, we'll find out a little bit more about that. I mean, that's what we're hoping.
Currently, would it break it? Would it be not allowed? Or?
Well, I mean, if you have the contactless firewall removed on a PIV card, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, you're violating the spec.
I mean, I think I just don't believe the current status of it. Smart pass.
Yeah, you would violate the spec in that case.
Find the specification of it. Why don't you?
You'll hear more about this at the.
All right, I'll let you off. Shut
no,
up.
No, 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 no. Oh, my sight.
So, one of the use cases that we've been showing with some interest is presentation of a card that's been issued out of a card management system with an opacity enabled profile, PIV certified applet, presenting that to the back of a phone, making the contents of that card available to the phone, and then you've got some sort of PKI SDK or PKI application that's PKI aware that now can leverage the credentials on that card contactlessly using the NFC interface on the phone. So, there have been a few issues with that. Notably, it's not always the best user experience to have to hold a card on the back of the phone continuously during a transaction. Having the NFC chip energized continuously on a phone can obviously brings down your battery life. There were some issues early on with NFC chipsets timing out when, you know, as a PIP, when a PIP card boots, when it gets power, it boots and it has a post routine, and that was long enough that some NFC chipsets were timing out. So I mean, obviously, as HID, we've been working with Broadcom, we've been working with some of the other NFC chip vendors out there to get that addressed. And then obviously the finalization of the specs in the 201-2 supplemental pubs, normative pubs. So
quick question. So, so we mentioned the NFC chip always powered on. What kind of battery drain was that?
It's pretty substantial. I mean, having that back there all the time with the card being read continuously, yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a substantial battery drain. So it's not it's not absolutely ideal, right? So, you know, if it's something that you're using on a regular basis to sign and encrypt emails, to do secure transactions with the CAC, it's not going to be, you better carry a charger with you, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, I probably have to do that anyway, but... you know, and obviously the user experience wasn't ideal either. I mean, it almost made sense to just have a case that would just kind of hold the card in behind. I think what it represents is a substantial advance in the paradigm. So, you know, instead of now protecting or instead of restricting access to the card over a contactless antenna, we're figuring out how to intelligently use it by protecting the traffic that passes.
Andrew, have you seen any reason why opacity could run over an advanced Bluetooth profile sometime?
There's no reason at all it couldn't run over that. There's no reason at all it couldn't run over that.
There's no standard in the specs on the 7816 or 13443 to use Bluetooth on the card.
Right.
That would be the issue.
Bluetooth? Yeah, right. But I guess Bluetooth type readers have it's a reader that used the card to identify the PIP card.
Yeah, I mean, it could, I mean, technologically speaking, it's at a different layer than what's actually going on with opacity, so there's no reason.
You still can power the card, so whatever.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Look, we've had PIP and CAC for a while. We had laptops and desktops. And we found a way to interface that. Some years ago, it was starting to be explored as how will these PIV and CACs, you know, interface with these mobile devices? Because there's not that same type of interface. Now you're starting to see DOD, being one of the lead agencies, you know, from the federal side, working with industry to start to, now that PIPS 201-2 has been issued, now there are some applications starting to grow, and you'll see this happen during the year, where this high-value, high-trusted, high-level of assurance credential can be used with these mobile devices in a way that still has to be worked out. There's some things that still need to be worked out. Battery life is just like one of the issues, right? There's some other issues. So.
Yeah, and the specs aren't quite here. It's supposed to be. Right, but this is pilot,
so. Right. Yeah. We've definitely seen inconsistent behavior from the different NFC chip manufacturers as well. So it seems that, you know, maybe the standards language needs to be tightened up a little bit in order for, you know, us to really be able to leverage that on a wide basis. Next slide.
But this isn't something you're going to wait 3 years to see. You're going to see some of this later.
We're eager to develop apps for it, so that's why I'm asking questions.
Okay. Go ahead.
Sure. So in the specific pilot use case in the context of NSTIC for the DMDC was issuing a derived credential to a phone, not necessarily, and this, you know, just forget derived credential, forget about it being on a secure element, forget about what it takes to do that. Just think of a digital certificate that's on a phone, accessible to the operating system and relying party apps on the phone. How do I enable access of that? That credential to perform a secure transaction with my CAC. Well, I could tap my CAC to unlock the container in which that's stored, and this is where the technology for me gets a little fuzzy. I heard talk about different things, and you know, if there's any specific questions on how that works, I can certainly go back. And I wasn't able to get an answer before coming to present this. But now, I've basically presented my CAC. I've authenticated as being to the CAC and as possessor of that CAC by providing my PIN. Now I can have access to the derived credential that's embedded on the phone and whatever technology I choose to do it. And now I can access a secure website. I can sign, encrypt email. I can do a normal use case from my phone leveraging that credential. One of the things that we demonstrated, which I thought was pretty neat, was that if the website demands a higher level of authorization than is presented by the derived credential, then it prompts you to present the CAC again and authenticate to the CAC, which I thought was pretty neat. So that may be an ideal situation where you're actually only using the CAC occasionally as it's actually needed, bringing up the NFC antenna on the phone, powering up the card, authenticating to the card.
So question here, so you're saying use the CAC to authenticate the holder. When is the PIN getting inserted?
The PIN would be entered upon presentation of the CAC, so that you would release access to the derived credential at that point. And then...
So that's almost like the two-factor authentication now, because now that you're using the paper card plus the derived credential.
Plus my PIN. So, right. So then, and then the derived credential will time out after a period of time unless the CAC is present. Unless the CAC is presented. So that's obviously very powerful, and it probably puts to rest some concerns about using a credential that may be embedded on a TPM or a secure element that's actually embedded in the device instead of standalone element.
So in this use case, I'm a little confused. So you're using both a CAC card as well as the derived credential?
Yes.
So why both? What's the value?
The value would be that you could use a lower assurance credential. So you could use effectively a soft certificate that would be generated in the context of the phone. And by presenting the CAC, you're proving possession of the CAC, therefore the legitimacy of the derived credential and its limited lifetime.
Is it possible to ask a question?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, this is Alfredo Magar from NIST. I have a clarification on the slide that you have on the screen, and probably the same question that I think Hildy was asking. I'm a little bit confused on what is the role of this derived credential on the phone versus the CAC card that has the PID credential. The one on the phone is an actual derived credential, or is it?
No, it would be so think about a soft certificate. It wouldn't actually be a hardware device. It wouldn't be, keys would not be generated in a 140-2 level 2 crypto device. It would maybe be generated in a lower assurance boundary. So it obviously is not ideal for all high assurance applications, but for, I guess the takeaway here is,
what level of assurance?
There are some applications that only require medium levels of assurance. And so maybe this is, instead of having the CAC all the time, maybe we can prove that we still have the CAC, keeping that derived credential active by presenting the CAC periodically, and then having a suitable credential for lower risk and lower assurance transactions.
So, sorry, hi everyone. Sal, it's Brad, and I apologize for being a little bit late. So just to clarify, Andrew, so I'm with Exponent with a Prime on this NSTIC grant, and so everything Andrew's saying is all true. We're trying to present the derivation process, the fact that we're driving credential, but we should probably articulate that we're actually still in some discussions with the exact way that the derived credential will be used by the MDC in the use case, but obviously we'll be taking in the CAC driving credential that Andrew's talked about, but the exact end use of that is still under discussion. We're just talking about that with them this morning.
Um, Okay, so I guess that's it for that slide. So we're at the end. I think the takeaway here is that this is an end stick. It's not. It's really to kind of get the juices flowing and show people, you know, maybe what's possible. Kind of get some ideas going. I think the takeaways here are that in the context of this pilot, you know, we're not doing anything that is not a standards-based approach. It's nothing proprietary. Opacity is something that, although HID, Active Identity, developed, we've opened that up. We've made it a public implementation for this exact reason, because we thought that it was worthwhile sharing it. Interoperability and convenience are kind of the hallmarks of this pilot. So it's anyway, pretty excited about this stuff. Any other questions? Mark.
So what's in the bracelet?
I believe what was put in there was a micro SD. So it looks like a micro SD, but it actually is a FIPS validated crypto chip with a GIX applet on it.
And the bracelet is an NFC.
Yeah, that provides the NFC antenna to the secure element.
Just to add a clarification, so we, for the purposes of the pilot, we articulate different form factors, but as was discussed for right now, we're going to primarily focus right now on a watch form factor, bracelet watch form factor.
You call it high bracelet.
No, not yet. Now we will.
You will be exposed to it.
That's right.
And the watch is a Rolex.
Yeah. Yeah. So you drive the credential onto the SD card or some other thing and then insert it into the device.
Correct.
Gotcha. I have another question. Is it possible?
Sure.
A question on the use case with the Rolex, with the watch. I don't think it would be the government use case, but anyway. In that case, first of all, how close is the bracelet, this watch, should be to the device, to the NFC receiver, to the phone, to operate? And second, there is a risk that can be deactivated because you will be moving your hand. How does it work? You have to actually touch the device, or is close enough, like contactless
card? How does it work? So, Sal, it's a standard 14443 communication, so it's just as if you had a contactless card. Same thing. So
sure.
You're going to have...
It is now joining.
You're going to have range issues just like we normally do, so you'll have to be close enough to do an initial tap or maintain proximity. There are other things that our team has investigated, but for purposes of the pilot, yeah, it's going to be the same, just like a standard card.
Okay. Thank you.
I think you cannot change hands. I have to lose contact.
If you want to maintain contact the whole time, yeah, if you want to maintain it.
The
bracelet
could be
Bluetooth. So, what I will try to, Andrew, first of all, thank you.
Sure, thank you, Tony.
But secondly, this will evolve as the year goes on. You'll see things happen, just like you see FIPS 201-2 we issued this past year. You should be seeing special publication 800-157 also. Put out for at least initial read sometime that Hildy will talk about later. There's a whole mobile task team that she is involved in that I would just tell you that every federal agency is very, very keen on how that PIV and CAC interface with these mobile devices, how they not only can do things at level assurance 4, but maybe in some cases do things at level assurance 3. I think you get it. This is an evolving story, but let's just say that they're much closer to doing things and demonstrating it now than they were 12 short months ago. I would say this year, they should be, some of the unknowns should be taken care of. So, more to come, and following IAB, you have...
Just one more question, so we can talk about the levels, right? So if you just used a FIPS 212 compliant card with CAKE on it, you can challenge and authenticate, right? Could, you know, again, what would it be? Level 4?
What if, would if you, if you that count. May be that may be the best of all questions. What would it be?
So what is the killer app that we're looking for? Because, you know, traditionally that's email. And that requires the keys that are on the PIP card. So I'm curious, you know, what the thoughts are on.
So my only way I know how to answer this is the way Mike Butler might be able to answer this. Every federal employee, whether they be in the DOD side or civilian, they don't have a killer app. And that killer app is, they not only have to, they have to use their credential and then do work. Let me just say that again. They have to use their credential and then do work. So if this was in DOD, I think what you heard Andrew say earlier, which was critical, he may have said it real quick. That means I must log on to the network. That means if I'm doing email, I must sign and encrypt. Get it?
Yeah, but those are the two that require the PIP card itself. Oh. Right. Not the derived credentials. No. That's the only, you know. So the derived credentials are a wonderful thing. I get it. And the level of assurance would be different. I get it. I'm just trying to understand the app. It makes sense.
The answer to your question is to do work.
Yeah.
So, Steve, the digital signature key, you know, the signing, graphic signing key can use on the mobile device itself.
As opposed to your card?
As opposed to your card. There's no PIP-specific OS specified for that. So you can have a second key there for purposes of signing. The encryption key as well is that one can be copied.
Well, it's escrow, but it required to go back into 140 device.
Yep, granted, so then it needs to be
a secure element.
Yes.
It's cool. Very cool.
All the work that you went along on the PAC side, just watch the phone and that credential and building access as this year progresses. Okay? Andrew, thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Nice job.